Hi, I'm Russell and I work at The Video Store, the place that you can go to once a week when you're looking for something to watch. When the store is quiet, behind the counter, I get to talk to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. How's it?
Good morning.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good, dude.
All right. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good.
Nice.
I'm good.
That's nice.
I just had a weekend of baby classes.
Oh, very cool.
I am on the cusp of fatherhood.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's not about you being a baby. Like, it's not you learning to be a baby or, yeah.
What kind of classes are those, Perrin?
Acting classes.
No. This is the prenatal knowledge.
Yeah.
Cool.
Which we can get into some capacity.
Okay.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in to this lovely video store. Yeah. You have a Graham GeForce Hackney.
Good morning.
Who is an editor and very much the producer of the show. Mm. We've got ourselves a Perrin.
Yo.
What's happening, P-Dog?
Not much, just checking the cricket scores. What test cricket's back, baby. No, it's just our second test against India, and we're tearing through them right now, which I'm loving.
Hey, Proteas.
Yeah.
Proteas. It doesn't have the same ring as Booker.
Yeah.
Flowers.
Flowers, yeah.
Indigenous flowers. You're a jack of all trades,
mm-hmm.
Over in the film industry.
Yeah.
And my name is Russell. I'm the owner of The Bioscope, mm-hmm. which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And once a week, we get to hang out and talk a little bit of shit about the film and the series that we're loving.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. we're ideally, hopefully, going to help you find something to watch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any huge pressing movies to chat about.
I think we do. Do you want to talk about anything?
Yes, I want to talk about Train Dreams.
Yeah, Sam, I watched it yesterday.
Yeah, okay, cool. I was going to mention the fact that it is now available on Netflix.
Cool.
Okay. Should we kick things off with a little, hey, did you guys see?
Let's do that.
Hey, did you guys see the second trailer for Project Hail Mary?
Oh, yes, I did see it.
I haven't watched the second trailer. I'm trying to avoid it now.
I was going to say, if you haven't read the book, don't watch the trailer.
Yeah, because I love the... No, I've read the book. I love the book.
Oh, okay,
but
cool.
I kind of want to be... Do we see
yes.
Rocky?
You see a little bit more of him.
You, okay, see, cool. You see quite a bit more of him.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, this is an exciting movie, and... it's based off a great book that we've been chatting about here on the video store. This is a book by the same chap who wrote The Martian.
Yeah, Andy Weir.
Andy Weir. This is a hard sci-fi. What is that term?
It's cool.
There's a term for it, which is the more realistic, the more smarter sci-fi. It's not.
I'd say it's hard sci-fi.
I think the term is hard sci-fi,
okay.
Which is like, how could this possibly work?
Yes.
And I think that's a far more exciting field than, you know, space wizards and fucking all sorts of cool, you know, fantasy stuff. It's almost like Star Wars is just as much fantasy as it is sci-fi.
Mm.
This is a very interesting look into the future where this is just what we know from the trailer, so I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah.
We know that the sun is dimming.
Yes.
And Ryan Gosling is a middle school teacher who is involved and at the center of this saving of the planet, which is cool, as he travels off into space to figure out why and how they could save the planet.
Mm.
I'm giving a very distilled version, and of course something happens pretty much halfway through the book where he encounters something, and of course now in the trailer a lot of this is now given away.
Yeah.
So I think we can speak about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that he encounters another spaceship in his journey, and on that spaceship is obviously an alien.
Yes.
And I just think what's cool about it is that a lot of the book, and this is what will be very interesting about the movie, a lot of it is about the process and the way in which these two completely different entities manage to communicate to each other. Yeah. They are smart. They are both. Yeah. They are both the sort of scientists of their planet to some degree, and it's a study of linguistics. It's a study of planning. It's a scientific process. That's what makes the book great.
Yeah, the audiobook's great because they factor in the sound design of the alien.
Okay.
So, like, because they speak in the book how he speaks in almost like musical tones.
Yes.
So the audiobook, like, at first will be like, it's freaking cool. Oh, so, like, it injects the idea when you, because often what I do when I catch up on my reading, because I drive so much and I don't have time to sit down and read a lot of the times, I catch up via audiobook. So that was a great one to, like, I'll read during the day, and then, like, when I'm driving, I'm like, okay, so it's like almost like allowing me to imagine what it would sound like when I read it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm very interested to see how they do it in the movie, which I haven't seen the latest trailer, but, like, they'll be very cool.
Yeah, and so this character is called Rocky.
Yes.
What you do get, and I don't think I'm giving anything away, is you get this incredible friendship. And this bond that exists.
It's such a good book.
Yeah. It's so cool. It's got so much, so excited.
Even though
it's
hard sci-fi and it's realistic and, you know, they use science to, like plausibilities of things happening, I love that it has so much warmth and heart to it. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a great, wholesome book, and it's touching, and it's, like you said, at the center of it, the backdrop is, you know, the world's ending, the sun's going to die, all this stuff. But at the heart of it, it's a book about friendship and belonging and finding your person. And, you know, it's like so good.
No, it's great. And I also think that that should always be our study here at the Video Store, is what is that balance? What were you leaning into?
Yeah.
What did you leave enough space for? And also just, you kind of pick this up in film school. It really plays out interestingly when you're doing documentary is... What have you subconsciously let in when you are telling a story?
Yes.
Mm. And if you really don't give a fuck about your subject, despite you presenting like you do, documentary can give it away. That's probably one of the most exciting and interesting and quite nuanced part of film school.
Yeah.
Is like, how do you reveal yourself in what you've chosen to, what questions have you asked? How have you reacted? How are you framing the subject? A great example in what I'm saying is, like, the classic 90s, how do we show the hot girl, is the camera goes from her legs up upwards, you know. That's the gaze, that's how you look. And so when you are telling a story, I think if there is the heart and the nugget and the truth and the care at the pip of your story, no matter what you're doing, it will come out if it's there.
Yeah.
And it will leave you cold if it is not.
Yeah, it comes, filmmaking should always be about sincerity.
Yeah.
Whether it's documentary filmmaking or, like you said, you know, like, even though whatever shrouding the pip of it, like, it can be science and, like, thing that you research that it's about. It can be about, like, a truck driver or whatever, you know, what a very specific thing. But like you said, if the center isn't beating, then nothing, why should he give a shit about any of it?
Yeah. There was a lovely word we heard in film school, which was the epistemological question.
Right.
Which is like, what is that kind of, what is at the heart?
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll get into it. And we'll just chat more and more about it, because I think those kinds of things come into play a bit with Wicked, but we'll talk about it.
Yeah, when does Project Hail Mary come out? March.
It's in March of next year. But we're going to blink. We're going to blink and it'll be here.
But it always, whenever they say, like, June 2026, I'm like, oh, it's so far. I want it now. There's a great line.
Especially when you've watched the trailer and you're like, it looks like it's done.
Yeah.
Like, is it not done? Can we not just watch this on Friday?
But that's what I used to love about Netflix. When they were dropping movies I was looking for, they would drop a trailer and it'd be like, oh, it's out in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, fuck yeah. Like, there's that, there's a line in The Simpsons where Moses, like, he decides to change his bar into a family restaurant.
Oh, yes.
And he buys a giant flash fryer, like, from the army. It's like a military-grade army flash fryer. And he's like, oh, I can flash fry a buffalo in 40 seconds. And Homer's like, 40 seconds? I want it now.
Hey, let's do a nerdy one. Hey, did you guys see that an issue of Superman #1 sold for $9.1 million.
Wow, that's the highest. So it must be...
By a lot.
Is it like mint?
It has a CGC rating of 9.
Okay.
Which is very high for a comic.
Is that the highest one they've seen?
It's the highest quality one ever. Like,
because that's the crazy thing is, like, I know... I remember there was one, because I think Nicolas Cage owns one. Didn't he sell it?
So. Yeah, possibly. He sold a ton of stuff.
But how that comic book got found is a great story.
Yeah.
How did
do you
want to
tell
found?
It?
It's something like two brothers, I think. I think it was a pair of brothers. I'm guessing their mother must have passed away.
Yeah.
And she was storing comic books, literally storing them in an attic.
Yeah,
because she thought they would be valuable one day.
Dude, that's and smart.
Yeah. And they always knew they were up there.
Yes, but she wouldn't let them.
I didn't get into too much of the weeds.
Fingers.
But
once
she died, it actually took them a little while to eventually get up into the attic.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then when they saw it, they were like, pretty sure this is worth something.
Yes.
That's crazy. Like, that's why, like, it's nuts because you get, that's with collectors these days, the problem is you get scalpers, right?
Yeah.
So, like, especially with that in mind. So, like, back in the fucking 50s, no one's going to be like, oh, I should buy three of these just in case, you know?
No one thought they would ever be valuable.
Yeah, because they thought it was nonsense. It was kiddies books, you know? So
especially with vinyl records.
Yeah.
The ones that are the most valuable now are the mistakes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's when on side A, the song is printed without missing a letter. Or
there's that, I'm not a fan, but there's that AC/DC live album where they misprinted the cover, the color.
Mm.
Locally, it was a local one.
We've told the story on the video.
Oh,
store.
Really?
Yeah.
The person who made that fuck up has been a guest on the radio.
He owns his Vinyl Cafe, right?
Vinyl Junkies.
Vinyl Junkie, that's
his
it.
His name's
Benji
Moody.
I remember, Benji, I've bought from him before.
and what's cool about it is that it actually it reminds you of the fact that pre-digital, you got sent the different color plates.
Yeah.
Yes.
So printing, you know, you had to do the red and then the green and then the whatever. And then there was an order in which these things had to be done.
Yeah.
And he got the order wrong. And then the other thing that it exposes, which is also just such a lovely reminder of history, is the fact that it took him a very long time before he saw the actual cover.
Yeah.
Because we were in the tip of Africa in the 80s. So it was about a month or two until the U.S. import stock arrived.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, shit,
he looked
different.
At it, and, you know, his was purple, and the other one was orange.
Yeah.
Right.
And so there were 500 of these that were made.
Okay.
And they are collectors.
Yes.
Yeah, they are like hen's teeth. Yeah,
I've seen one or two of them.
In the wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and of course, everybody knows exactly what they are.
Mm.
So they're at a fair where someone's like, I've got one of them.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's usually not on the floor. It's usually like, hey.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's a good 10,000 rand, 15,000 rand.
What's your most valuable record that you have that you know is like fucking would fetch a pretty penny?
There's a Jimi Hendrix that I got, the Electric Ladyland.
Oh, do you have the original Naked Lady cover?
I've got the Naked
Lady
cover. Then it's hard to tell because the main platform to determine this price is an
Discogs.
App called Discogs,
yeah.
which is a big trading app. And of course, it could be listed as this price, but you don't know whether you will consistently get that price.
Yeah,
so that, I mean, that's just how this thing works. But there's a band called Last Dinosaurs, which is a very cool, very hip band from Australia that we opened for as Short Straw. And they gave us vinyls backstage as a gesture of, you know, being good people.
Tearing,
and they signed it. And I just held on to mine and I checked it on Discogs and like it was also 6,000-7,000 rand.
That's crazy.
It's amazing.
Yeah, mine is Death Grips ex-military. So Death Grips are a fucking they're a crazy experimental hardcore hip hop group. And the album that I have, so I have ex-military, so I have got the bootleg, which I feel is more in line with their ethos.
Okay.
It's a Russian bootleg. And then I've got, which is on two vinyl, because the original pressing's only on one vinyl.
Right.
Anyways,
okay.
So the...
What era?
Ex-military is early... it's like 2011, 2012, 2010.
Oh, okay, recent. Yeah.
But they're like a fucking cult group now, right? So Anyways, so ex-military, while they were pressing that, they got a cease and desist because they sampled so many tracks from like Bowie to a bunch of other stuff. Yeah, okay. And they got cease and desists from like record labels and whatever. So they had to stop the pressing mid-press.
Right.
So okay. There's... They speculate that there's like 700 copies that exist or 723 copies or they don't know.
Interesting.
And the copy I have, you can tell which one is, like you can tell what's a bootleg and what's not. Like there's a specific like Sharpie mark on the cover or, you know, right. the text is a different color, whatever. Anyways, mine is still sealed, hasn't been opened. I don't want to open it because I've got the bootleg to listen to. And I've checked on Discogs. It goes for like, it's going for like 15 grand. Like, it's insane. So, sorry. I love
it. Yeah, it's interesting. And also, the other thing, just one of the last points, which I think is an interesting thing about collector collecting, is the fact that CDs obviously became the dominant format because they could be quite easily mass produced and they were smaller and they were easier,
cheaper
and whatever. And so, there was a period where vinyl was coming back. It obviously remained a format because of hip hop and because of the sampling and some dance music still kept it. That's why it was still vaguely in production. The plants didn't completely close down. Yeah. But just as it was slowly coming back, there was a brief little period where a band would be like, shouldn't we do vinyl? Right. Isn't vinyl like maybe a thing?
There were lots of
and then the record
brands.
Label would be like, no, just do like a few. And it's those ones that, you know, are the most valuable. Because nowadays, a Taylor Swift will make vinyl.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have represses.
And they're making many, many, many vinyls now. Yeah. So they're no longer collectible. But it's interesting, a guy like Brett over at Mr. Vinyl here, which is a neighbor here for the Bioscope, kids just buy these Taylor Swift vinyls, whether they have a record player or not. They just want to own something physical. There's something very cool about that.
But that's what I like about it. I mean, it feels tangible. You know,
yeah,
like
totally.
They're holding music.
No, I know, Perrin, you've got halls of your house dedicated to that very feeling. When I was at the Warner Brothers studio tour in LA, I got to see those comics as well.
That's cool.
They have them on display. The Superman, Batman.
Yeah, I remember. Oh, okay. I remember years ago as well, because you always hear stories about where ones have shown up. Mm. I remember there was one that sold for like still like $250,000, $300,000. I don't quote me on that, but it was literally Action Comics, the Superman one, lined in someone's wall, like
like a wallpaper.
Yeah, and that sold for a cuck load as well. It's just crazy because, like, that's what I was saying about sculptors. You get guys now where they have limited runs. That's why a lot of these sites now, they limit one per customer.
Mm.
So, like, but then you get guys who program bots to buy stuff. So there's a Mondo. You know Mondo, right?
Yeah.
So Mondo do, like cool posters and some, limited vinyl runs and stuff like that and toys and all that. And often they'll be, like, cool. There's 300 of these really amazing original artworks by so-and-so, but consistently people would miss out because they'd be sold out in literally a second after they go live. Jeez. And that's sculpers. And then you go on eBay and it's like pre-order and it's going for $200 more.
I see.
It's fucking insane. Like sculpers are fucking worst, you know?
Sure.
But that's where you and me, I mean, like with records, I won't buy a record just because it has value. Like, I'll buy a record because I want to listen to it.
Yeah,
sure. There's a lovely combination. There's been a few times where I've bought two. One to remain sealed and one to be the one that
Very few occasions. Yeah, like the Death Grips, the only reason why I bought that is because I saw it for a good price online. I was like, holy shit, that's one of my holy grails.
Yeah.
I gotta fucking get it.
There's two magazines that I've bought where I've consciously gone, I want to keep this as an artifact.
Oh, okay.
The one was a lovely...
Was it the Almanac from Back to the Future?
One of them was a Newsweek special about Obama.
Oh, okay.
When he became president, and there was just these incredible photos. There's like five or six photos that will go down in history for what Obama was and represented in that time.
Mm-hmm.
There's that great black and white one of all the American presidents, they're all like old white men, and he's that like kind of blurry photo as he's a blurry figure that's sort of walking down this hall.
Okay.
You sort of see him in the foreground and these sort of old white men in the background.
Right.
It's a great photo. And then the other thing I bought was The Economist in the depths of COVID.
Okay.
Where there's the animation, the cover of The Economist is the world, the world, mm-hmm. sitting, like the planet Earth sitting in space, and this sign over it that just said closed.
Chris.
And I was just like, I saw that and was like, this is. And also, I pulled over once on the side of the road to take out one of the Star newspaper headlines. Yes. Remember back in the day, they didn't do that much anymore.
Yeah.
It was the one for Mandela when he died.
Okay.
Oh, crazy.
So, I kind of just thought I need to own this.
Where were you guys when Mandela died? Like, I
don't remember specifically the place.
Okay. Yeah. So, are we actually, when we heard, so I was in when Greenside was still like a thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were in Greenside with two Vars teammates. And we heard, and everyone was like, oh my God, like Mandela died. And we were like, holy shit. Because it was around the time where he was like not doing well.
Yeah.
There was a long period where
yeah, and it was
everyone
late.
Was kind of waiting.
Mm-hmm. So we all decided, like everyone there was like, fuck it, we're going to go like to his house. And like we went there and it was just crowds of people. So we were there when like it just happened. And it was so funny. Derek Watts, that's the
Carte
Blanche. It was so funny because it was like late. It was like 1 a.m., 2 a.m. And like Derek Watts was there with Carte Blanche. And we were like not far from him. We were like maybe where I am, where just like maybe two rows ahead of where Graham's sitting. And like my friend goes, holy shit, that's Derek Watts. He looks so tired. And my friend's like, shut up, dude. We're supposed to be like sad. Like, it's so funny. Jeez,
I've told the story on the video store. I will quickly repeat it. Sometimes when you play golf, you get partnered with other people. If you're a two ball and someone's a single, sometimes the marshal will kind of to speed up the field. So sometimes you meet these incredible people and you spend the next 2 hours or whatever together. Yeah. So you kind of get to know each other. And one of the dudes that I once met up with was a journalist, a Frenchman, I think. His sole job was to be stationed in Joburg waiting for Mandela to die.
Uh-huh.
That's crazy.
He was apart from his kids. He was apart from his family. And if you remember, literally what we were saying a minute ago, is that Mandela took a little while to die.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was
like
critically ill for a long time. Mm. Jeez, and so this dude was
wild.
Obviously, you don't want the person to die, but you kind of want to wrap things up so that you can go home to your family. It was a very interesting.
It's almost like he was a genie released back. He's like, oh, it's done now.
Do you remember on the day of his funeral how much it rained?
Yeah, I remember that.
And there's that sort of African belief and proverb that it's the heavens receiving you. It was a weird, interesting time.
It's really fitting. Like, that's crazy, man.
P-Dog, do you have a Hey Did You Guys See?
I do. Okay, so did you guys speak about this? Hey Did You Guys See V for Vendetta series in the work at HBO?
Oh, yes.
Did you speak about it?
No, we didn't speak about it, but I did see it.
So James Gunn is developing that with HBO.
That's cool.
So I wasn't a fan of the movie. I didn't feel like it was a good adaptation of the book at all. It missed so many points of what the book is trying to make. Because the movie just became an action blockbuster movie where the book has so many deep underlying currents about fascism and where we're going.
I remember what Alan Moore said about it was he said they should have just set it in America.
Yeah.
Because it's an Americanized version of the story.
100%.
Even though it's still set in London, like the comic book is. Because in the movie, they changed V's kind of ideal to be about freedom, which is a very American thing.
Exactly.
Whereas in the comic book, he's an anarchist.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point, right? So, the book is just phenomenal. So I'm wondering if it's going to be more...
It's a series of comics.
The thing is when you
has
like,
it been it's been put as a book.
Yeah, so that's the thing, like when you say a graphic novel, often it's a collection of of a series run. So Watchmen was like 10 issues.
It's
collectively known now as a graphic novel.
Yeah.
But the point I want to make is that it's made up out of separate issues.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so
those must be fucking valuable.
But by virtue of that,
It's episodic.
It warrants itself to rather be a TV show.
Yeah. So, and I mean, the V for Vendetta book is dense. Like, it's
all of Alan Moore's stuff.
Alan Moore's fucking phenomenal. He's a grumpy bastard who hates every adaptation of his. Like, and he doesn't even give things a shot anymore, which irritates me. Like, Watchmen, when Damon Lindelof was developing it. So I love Damon Lindelof. He learned his lesson from Lost. The Leftovers is my favorite show of all time. Watchmen is fucking phenomenal. He even emailed Alan Moore saying, "Hey, it's Damon Lindelof, the guy who's going to fuck up your book." and Alan Moore didn't even take that as a joke. He was just like, "I'm a grumpy bastard."
Yeah. But once again, you can change it to a medium of film, but can you still get the essence right?
It's by keeping
you know,
the
that was something we spoke earlier about James Gunn's Superman, where it was like, I think they kind of got the spirit of what Superman
100%,
is. The last go-around of Batman had everybody interesting when they were like, oh, he's actually a detective solving crimes. He's not just a wealthy
Gotham
dude
feels like Gotham.
Using cool tricks. So.
But that's the thing with the Watchmen series is I felt like Zack Snyder, even though he did a panel-for-panel essentially adaptation, it felt hollow. It didn't have the weirdness of Watchmen. You know what I mean? Damon Lindelof's Watchmen had that weird sense of humor that was going throughout it. And they even... The release of it.
The Lindelof one? Is that the
that's
movie?
That's the HBO series.
Oh, that's the HBO series.
So that was like a sequel to the book, not the movie.
Yes.
So when people say, oh, just watch the movie, like, rather read the book than see the show as a sequel. Because the cool thing about that sequel series, how they released it as well. So with the graphic novel, after each chapter or issue, they have like a cool thing from that world. So there'll be like newspaper clippings of... Dr. Manhattan, right? So like, and there'll be like cool things that like expand the lore and make it feel like it's a real lived-in world, right?
Sure.
And with Watchmen, how they released it is the soundtrack, which is done by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Yeah,
cool.
I've got the all three volumes on vinyl.
Of course you do.
And how they released those is they had the first one is a fictional band that was there when the apocalypse happened in the first run, right? And like each, it wasn't by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. They were like specifically like fake things in that world.
Right.
And even on the HBO website, they would have like fake like things that was happening around the time. Right. So smart.
The word cult comes from the word culture.
Yes. Yeah, 100%,
there is a culture that has been built around something.
Mm.
So the more culture you have added to something, the lore, the soundtrack, the characters, the kind of encyclopedia. Best example is, of course, Star Wars, where there's just books.
100%,
where there's books and books about extra things that probably
Star
don't even
Trek,
show up.
Yeah.
That creates cult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Alan Moore also doesn't let his name be put on anything anymore, except for one episode of the Justice League animated series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because he actually worked with them to when they adapted. Because he used
That's
to write
crazy.
Issues of Justice League.
The original Justice League run, right? Yeah. The
Justice League
show.
Unlimited.
So, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yes.
Because like the problem with Alan Moore is that I get why he's sour about Hollywood. Because I know they tried to adapt shit in the 80s and they wouldn't give him credit or pay him sufficiently.
Yeah.
And Dave Gibbons is the only one like for Watchmen. So he was the artist on Watchmen. He's the only one who like would collaborate with like people. So like Alan Moore is a notorious grump, but he's a fucking genius when it comes to writing.
Yeah.
I just it blows my mind that he won't give Lindelof's Watchmen a chance because Lindelof's Watchmen is just so interesting in what they do is that he expands the lore, but he talks about race and he talks about police brutality and stuff. And I feel like that's stuff that Alan Moore would appreciate because he's covered that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's covered in V for Vendetta, there's homophobia, there's racism, there's xenophobia, you know. That's what V for Vendetta covers. It's heavily inspired by 1984, right? But it's also showing, you read V for Vendetta now, it's showing what the world is right now.
Mm.
You know, it's steeping back into fascism, it's totalitarianism, it's, you know, it's just, it's so good. And I think it's a great time to adapt it now. So I'm dying to see if they actually it's more in line with the
book. So who is going to adapt it?
So James Gunn is developing it.
Oh, James Gunn.
Which I don't know how I feel about that, because when I hear James Gunn, he's often more lighter in tone, obviously.
Yeah, he's got his like quippy humor.
But that doesn't mean he's directing it. But I feel like James Gunn understands source material so well that he'll be like, no, V for Vendetta can't be like quirky and humorous and stuff like that.
Let's not involve Chris Pratt.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, he's V.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyways, yeah.
Lovely.
Do you have a...
Let's see.
I've got one more. That'll be quick.
Hey, did you guys see we got a teaser trailer for Toy Story 5?
Yeah.
Haven't watched it, but I know it's out.
Yeah, just a little teaser. What did we get? Sets up the premise. It's basically like what we kind of knew. It's the new kid now gets basically an iPad.
Yeah.
What is the existential threat of technology to toys?
Yeah.
Cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm keen on it. Like, look, I think Toy Story could... it should have been the last one. Four, it gets better every time I rewatch it.
I really like four.
Four is really good. It's smart. But like, I remember a while ago when people were talking about like what the next Toy Story is going to be.
Yes.
They were like, Buzz and Woody meet God. And they have to kill God because of this. No, just because I like Toy Story is so existential in terms of what they discuss each one. I mean, Toy Story 4 was the toy that just... where she creates a toy, what's the name?
Forky.
Forky, where she makes a toy out of a spork, right? But now the whole thing is that like she makes this toy and he just comes into being and he's freaking out and he's like, what is everything? And they have to teach him like, oh no, it's okay, this and that. And like that's such a dense idea for a kid's movie.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
So I'm excited for Toy Story 5.
Yeah, and it's Andrew Stanton who's directing amazing. It. So
Who's that?
He directed Finding Nemo. He directed WALL-E.
He's done the
he's one of like the old guard at Pixar. He's
funny
been
how
since
that name
one.
Hasn't to me transcended.
Oh right.
Do you obviously know this person's name, but it doesn't feel like that person is a very well known
right.
But you often see the only people in animation where people are like, oh, it's like Miyazaki.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even like Doctor, he did Inside Out.
Yeah, Pete Doctor.
Pete Doctor is kind of getting there.
Mm.
But like other names, people are like, I know that name. And then you're like, oh.
Their work
maybe
is,
Brad
their work
Bird.
Is, yeah. Yeah, maybe Brad Bird.
Yeah, Brad Bird.
The work is bigger than their name.
Yeah.
Which is actually quite a nice place to be.
Yeah. I'd rather, if I was an artist, I'd love that more. You know?
Totes.
Totes.
But I like Toy Story 4. I think people said it's unnecessary, but I disagree.
I thought it was great.
Because... Toy Story 3 ends Andy's story.
Exactly.
But Toy Story was never
Bonnie's story.
Well, also that, but Toy Story was never Andy's story.
That's true.
It's Woody's story.
Yeah, that's
Toy Story 4 it gives us an ending for Woody, which makes me concerned about bringing him back. Like,
how does he get back into the picture? Because obviously they're back with Bonnie because Bonnie's playing with the iPad.
Yeah.
But anyways.
We'll see.
I wonder whether it could be like a multiversey thing where they... where they, as a spirit, go into sort of digital characters of themselves on the iPad, and it's a little bit of a Wreck-It Ralph-y situation.
Oh, cool.
What I saw someone online suggest, I don't think they're going to do this, but it would be really cool, is in Toy Story, like in the world of the story, it's established that Woody is like an existing, like vintage character.
Yes, yeah.
Somebody said, what if this Woody is like a reissue? Like as an anniversary
That's
thing, they've reissued a bunch of Woodies.
That's interesting.
And this is a new one who now they have to explain. It's like a role reversal of Woody is now the one who doesn't know he's a toy.
That's crazy.
That would be so good.
I'd love that, actually.
I can't see them doing it, but I'd love it.
I forgot that they introduced that in Toy Story 2, where they're like, he's this vintage character who's a smash.
This is a little risque, but there are corners of the internet that make jokes about... what toys could be in Andy's mom's bedside drawer.
I've seen that.
And it's just like, do those come to life and
adult,
talk to each other?
It's adult Toy Story.
And the other one's just like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, they're like scene shit, you know. Yeah.
These like sort of jaded war veterans.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It's like, I've seen some things.
Get the 1,000-yard stare. Yeah. last one. So I'm very excited about this. If you're a fan of Cormac McCarthy, he wrote The Road, No Country for Old Men, Blood Meridian. He's probably my favorite author. Outer Dark, which I think it's his third novel.
Okay.
Third or second novel. That is one of his books, because Blood Meridian is considered his darkest, most fucked up book.
Right.
It's a Western, anti-Western, I'd say. But Outer Dark, I think, rattled me more because of that ending. Anyways, so that is being adapted, starring the hot ticket at the moment, Jacob Elordi, and Lily Rose Depp. And what it's about is these siblings. It's set in the South. These siblings have a child together, and they eventually have a child together, but they separate, and then they're trying to find each other again.
Right.
And
but they're blood siblings.
Yeah. And it's fucked up. Like
sounds like a dark set of choices.
It's fucked up because like it's got the whole Cormac McCarthy, like these mystic characters coming through as well. Like there's these three almost drifters on the road that are like kind of crossing paths with the brother at some point. And it's like they like represent death and all this stuff, and it's so fucking good. Okay. And it's being adapted by director. He's Hungarian. His name is Laszlo Niemes. He did Son of Saul. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Mm-mm.
So it was a Holocaust drama where the premise was a guy in one of these death camps, someone dies and they decide to throw an actual ceremony, funeral ceremony for this person, but they have to do it in secret.
Uh-huh.
But the whole film, most of it is told, literally the shot is, it's like a close-up on him.
Oh, jeez.
So most of the film, you're seeing his reaction to things and stuff. It's fucking incredible. One best foreign language film at the Oscars years ago.
Okay.
Son of Saul.
Son of Saul. It's a great film. So he's adapting it, which I think is a really nice choice.
Okay.
Because obviously there's another Blood Meridian attempt to adapt coming out from John Hillcoat, who did the adaptation. But I don't think that's going to happen because people from Scorsese to Ridley Scott have tried to adapt it, and it's never worked because it's so fucking hardcore and grim and violent, and I just never picture it being done.
Right.
And also, it's just sometimes those things need to exist just on the page. Yeah,
it's
that doesn't necessarily mean we have to make the movie version of it.
Yeah.
I know the instinct is there, but...
Yeah, I mean, look, if they can pull it off, it'd be amazing, but that source material is just so... Because the thing is, if you water it down, you're missing the point of the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because the violence is so extreme in it that it needs to be there. Because it's about a band of Americans who are hired by the Mexican government to go scalp Indians.
Right.
And it's fucking hardcore.
This is in the cowboy and Indian era.
Yeah, it's anti-Western. So like it's basically, it's just fucked up. There's a guy called the, I've got the name, but the main antagonist in it is... this scary giant, like almost albino man, who is just almost like a mythical, like an Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men. He's just evil incarnate, you know? Like, it's a fucking great book. So you should read it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We are trying to find me a book to read.
Oh, yes.
I was in a lovely bookstore that I get a lot of the secondhand bookstore stock for the Bioscope gift shop, and I was looking out for Tale of Two Cities.
Thought of was Catch 22.
You have said that, and I did start it.
Catch 22 is incredible.
Yeah,
I put my toes in the shallow end and was like, this is cool.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Yeah,
it's really funny.
I'm going for a little more quantity at this point, so I looked at how thick it was and was like, can I give up the whole of 2026 for Catch 22?
Read The Road, actually. By Cormac McCarthy.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
The Road.
It's a heavy book, but the way he writes is very, he's got a very like poetic prose, but it's very simple as well.
Yeah. I've taken a few copies of No Country for Old Men and sold them in the gift shop.
Mm. Oh, cool.
I haven't read it.
The one thing that you would get like that might push you back though is that he doesn't put inverted commas for when people are speaking.
Okay.
So it's almost like it feels like stream of consciousness sometimes where like there'll be characters just talking. It'll just be lines of dialogue.
And do you instinctively know what's what?
Eventually your brain will start to be like, okay, this person's speaking. But like when I read Cormac, sometimes I start putting in inverted commas just so when I reread, I don't get so
Oh, you edit the book?
No, no. I just like I just with a pencil scrawl like inverted commas.
Okay.
Because at first you'll say like so and so dialogue, and then you'll say said this person, okay. And then he'll establish who's speaking. So then eventually, like when TikToking between each other.
That's fascinating because it's like it's almost like it's written by a high schooler that doesn't understand inverted commas. But that's the point. And then that was also a lovely sort of click for me is that complicated, challenging books make complicated, challenging movies where all of a sudden you just dumped in a scene and you're like, who's this? What's this? What's going on? Something I want to get into is, choosing what we were going to watch yesterday and seeing that Train Dreams was available and we watched the trailer and I was like, this looks amazing.
Gorgeous.
The quotes, the everything tells you that this is going to be incredible. But we'd just done 2 full days of baby training. So it was either that or some very cheesy borderline Christmas movie.
Okay.
And so we opted for the Christmas movie because we just needed something a little bit simpler. But yeah, we'll get into it. Should we play a little quick game?
Yes.
Do it.
Of what movie am I? Ooh. All right. So everyone else can who's overhearing us chat, who's busy browsing the shelves right
fucking
now.
Bad at these.
Okay. You can play along. But yeah, the basic idea here is that I'm going to give you prompts for a movie.
Okay.
And the moment you know what movie it is, as per tradition when we have our Video Store Presents nights, because we sometimes do quizzes before our Video Store Presents, we started the tradition of you shouting, "Oh, Captain, my Captain." Okay, that's when you know the film.
Yeah.
And then I want you to write it down on the piece of paper, and then we will find out at the end if you got it right.
Okay.
So when I know it, I say, "Oh, Captain, my
Captain."
"Oh,
Captain, my Captain."
I don't reveal it yet.
You don't reveal it yet, and that's you banking it in.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Do we have to number our guesses?
We're only going to do like two, possibly three.
Okay.
Okay. I am a psychological thriller.
Okay.
I am based on a French mystery novel.
French.
I am the first film to use the dolly zoom effect.
Fuck.
Oh, which one is it?
I think I know it is.
There's always one in this list, which famously I'm going to not use. Because it is too obvious. And then I'll give you one more, which I think will seal the deal. I'm directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
It was between two for me. I'm undecided. I've taken a swing. Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Okay, G-Force, you got that one.
It's my second guess.
You banked it.
Fuck. The third guess, I had to cancel my last guess.
There's one which is too obvious. So I'm not even going to say it.
Okay.
Okay.
Fuck, it's not right. I know it's not right. God damn it.
Okay. I don't really know this as a movie. Should I move on if I don't know it?
It's definitely not this. Fuck, sorry. I'm annoyed. Okay, go for it. Yeah.
If you don't know it, there's a chance we don't know it.
No, I'm bad at these though, dude. Same. Jesus.
Okay, let me...
Let's just try. When you recognize it, then let's...
Okay. I'm a cult comedy.
Okay.
I originated from a film school class project.
Interesting.
I feature an epic dance scene. I don't want to do the others. It's too obvious.
Epic dance scene.
Okay, I'm going to... Oh, wait, say it again. Captain, I'm going to take a guess.
I'm a cult comedy. I originated from a film school class project. I feature an epic dance scene. It's a great dance.
Oh, Captain, I've taken a guess. Oh, Captain, my Captain, I've taken a guess.
Oh, I'm taking a guess. Oh, Captain, my fucking Captain.
I'm not familiar enough with cult comedies, I guess.
Oh, God, I don't know. Jesus, is embarrassing. Fucking hell.
Okay, here's an interesting one.
Okay.
I'm a historical epic.
Cool.
I feature action-packed fight sequences. I was once the most expensive Indian movie ever made. I feature a dance number to the song Natu Natu.
Captain.
It's always the fourth one, which is so obvious.
I still haven't seen that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Should we do it? Okay. Last one.
Oh, we're doing four.
No. I'm saying out of the three that we did,
should
we reveal the answers?
Sure.
Okay. The first one, I'm a psychological thriller. I am a French. I'm based on a French mystery novel. I am the first film to use the dolly zoom effect. I am directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
Was it Vertigo?
Psycho?
It's Vertigo.
Okay. I couldn't remember. I was like between Psycho and Vertigo. I knew
the dolly zoom was done before Psycho.
Yeah.
But when you said French psychological thriller, I was like, okay, there's Les Dabas of Balik.
Yeah.
And then Psycho was made out of a response to that.
Yes.
And then, yeah, fucking Vertigo. God damn it.
The one of the things was... one of my characters has a fear of height.
It's like, fuck, that's dead. That's dead giveaway.
So when you see it, I'm going to always skip those ones.
Okay. Stuart.
Okay.
This is definitely wrong. I don't have this one.
I am a cult comedy. I originated from a film school class project. I feature an epic dance scene.
Is it Napoleon Dynamite?
It is Napoleon Dynamite. What did you say?
You're going to laugh at me. So he didn't go to film school because he famously went to film school for like a week and then he quit. Boogie Nights. The only fucking dance scene I can think of there is at the when they have the montage of him becoming famous. There's a dance scene in a disco club. And he did a fucking mockumentary about Dirk Diggler before Boogie Nights. So that's I was like, maybe it's that.
Yeah.
It's amazing how like you are in your head because you just have too much knowledge.
Yes.
Aaron. It's not you're a sort of pub quiz nightmare in that you actually know too much. Because the other prompt where I star John Heda and I'm known for the line vote
dead
for
giveaway.
Pedro.
Fucking
so the further we go down these cards, they're too obvious. Okay, the last one, I am a historical epic. I feature action-packed fight sequences. I was once the most expensive Indian movie ever made.
Before you answer?
Yeah.
What do seals say when they get fish? RRR, is that it?
Yeah.
There we go.
What do seals say when they get fish?
It's a famous, so someone posted, because when it won Best Original Song at the Oscars, the prompt is... like seals when they get fish, and then they're like, RRR. So good. Okay, cool.
All right, that was fun. We actually have to work.
Oh, yeah.
You guys hang here. I'll chat to him.
Cool.
Okay.
No, wait, what's your name?
Thomas is my name.
Thomas.
Ooh, this sounds gloriously resonant and rich.
Do you do anything involving microphones and recording?
I've been known to occasionally record, yes.
Are you a musician?
I am, unfortunately.
Who do you play with?
I play for a band called Mango Groove.
Ah! Oh, that old band. What do you play with Mango Groove?
I play guitar for them. It's the best three chords I've ever learned how to play.
That's amazing. Oh, fucking what a treat.
And the video I'm returning today is, in fact, the Woodstock documentary, 3 days of peace, love, and music, and sex, and drugs, and rock and roll. Thank you very much.
Lovely. What a lovely film. If we just focus on the rain, we'll make it go away.
We actually brought that up, talking about that, is this...
If we focus real hard.
You know, 500,000 people manifesting to take the rain away, which...
Yeah.
In terms of... And the fascinating bit also is because they're discussing Kundalini yoga, which my girlfriend is into, and she's like, oh my gosh, like this is absolutely relevant
and
brilliant.
Is that a type of yoga?
It is, yes.
What type of yoga is it?
Gosh, you're asking the wrong person here.
Okay, it's a special kind of yoga.
Yes.
How did you watch it? Did you rent it or pirate it or where is it available?
So it is available on iTunes.
Mm.
So I bought the HD version.
Oh, lovely.
Because then you can see all of the wonderful mud nudity and
it's so good. What could be very cool is doing a double bill between that and the train wreck Woodstock 99.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
How, because they also make reference to that,
yes,
the 60s one, to go, listen, it wasn't all roses, hey? Like, it was a shambles. There was a lot of problems.
Yes, but there's a very difference in terms of the anger about it where everyone in the 60s
exactly.
is.
There's a difference in that, yeah.
But, I mean, it's, I think, to be able to have some of the experiences, what you consider is that what we have on our phones these days, in terms of recording capabilities, your standard iPhone can record more than 16 tracks.
Yes.
they had a whole sum total of 16 channels to record the whole of Woodstock, if even.
Okay.
So this is stuff that everyone walks around with now.
Yeah.
Was the height of technology to document this historic event.
Yeah.
So it's another thing where you just look at how much the world has changed since then.
And it's amazing how much they got that festival.
It's incredible. And these things that just have... Someone was clearly aware that it had a greater historical significance than just selling a concert video somehow.
Have you seen the couple that were very famously the couple wrapped in the blanket in the front? They've stayed together their whole lives.
It's extraordinary.
And they've recreated that photo. Just to show. But that's lovely. What a nice film to have returned.
That was great. I highly recommend it. If you've got 3 hours and a taste in music that sits on the more psychedelic end of the spectrum.
Yeah, that dude in his motorbike and how he like rolls through with just a sort of leather vest on.
As my girlfriend said, torsos were clearly a thing in the 60s.
100%. Thank you, man.
What a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
All right, that was fun.
Nice.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, speaking of work, we actually have to get to work. Yeah, I wanted to put on the shelves the fact that Train Dreams is here.
Mm-hmm.
We can put it on the Netflix shelf.
Yeah.
This is a film we've spoken about, and it's a film that the two of you have seen.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Mm. Gorgeous.
It's beautiful, dude.
The way it's shot, Jesus Christ.
Oh, it is exquisite.
Is it
feels like
a
Malick film, yeah.
But is it a nice story? Does it leave you
somewhere?
I think
somewhere? It's beautiful. Yeah.
It's hard to describe because it's not plot-driven at all.
And that's what I said to Leslie.
Yeah, I feel like it's moment-driven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. We were deciding what film to watch yesterday afternoon after coming home from this baby training.
Mm.
I saw that Train Dreams had arrived.
Yeah.
And then we watched the trailer together, and I turned to her and I was like, you can see it's a vibe movie.
Yeah.
And she's like, what does that mean? I was like, it's not going to have a strong plot, but it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was sitting at about number 9 in the movies.
Yeah.
Our next option, which was sitting very firmly at number 1, is a movie called Champagne Problems.
Oh, Kira's so excited to watch that.
Which is not literally a Christmas movie, but it has certainly got the vibe of a Christmas movie.
Christmas adjacent.
It's Christmas adjacent.
Yeah.
Which is pretty people falling in love in what is effectively the 2025 version of the fairy tale.
Okay.
It used to be a prince of a obscure, unknown European country.
Yes.
These days, it's like, oh, I'm secretly fuck off wealthy.
Oh, right.
Okay. I'm secretly the heir to, you know, a chateau in France. And I'm complicated, but we've got something special.
Do they go back to his small town roots?
Well, they go to his chateau in France, and it's all about champagne and the integrity of, you know, in the face of corporate greed. You know, real, like, challenging shit.
Yeah.
But good old Champagne Problems, if you are looking for a light mooch film, that's what we call it here at the video store.
Yes.
It is a good film to mooch to.
Okay.
Who made Train Dreams, and why the fuck is it called Train Dreams?
So it's Clint Bentley.
Okay, do we know anything about him?
Yeah, he's the guy who wrote Sing Sing.
Oh, shit!
Yeah, so he wrote and directed this.
It's got that feel.
I advocated so much for Sing Sing.
Sing Sing's so good.
I should know that.
But yeah.
Okay, I didn't. I just know how incredible Sing Sing was.
Yeah.
One of my favorite films of last year.
Yep.
Okay, so Train Dreams, interesting. It's always interesting to see when these art house films land in the streaming platforms and how they sit in amongst Champagne Problems.
Yeah.
They get a little bit of love, but it's just interesting that you almost see the economics of cinema played out before you, where this beautiful piece of art is sitting.
Yeah.
It maybe makes the top 10, but it's 9.
Yeah.
It's 8, 9, or 10, where very firmly at number 1 is the plinky plonky blum 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 blum. Blum, 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 kind of movie.
Blanky, yeah.
So I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it sounds like it wasn't pretentious art for art's sake.
It is definitely an art house film, but it's not pretentious for pretentious sake. I think it's it's just such a, it's a very simple story about a man whose experiences love, loss, and everything in between. And it's literally also about, in the grand scheme of things, it's about the changing landscape of the world we live in.
Yeah.
So
what era is it set in?
Like early 1900s?
Yeah, up until like the 60s.
Yeah.
So it starts off with the narrator saying this, like, this is the 80 years of this man's life.
Mm.
And then it goes through xenophobia. It goes through...
And that man is William H. Macy, hey?
No,
it's Joel Edgerton.
Yeah.
Oh, Edgerton's
which
character.
Which is... Okay. He is still wildly underrated.
Yeah, dude, he's such
he's
a good actor.
So... I've been a fucking huge fan of him for so long. He is incredible in the Underground Railroad. Holy shit. Mm. He's just such a masterful actor. I know he is probably the dark horse for best actor. Mm. It'll probably... Chalamet's campaign has already started.
Yeah.
But it's a gorgeous movie. It's a... Do you know what you'll like about it? Did you like Into the Wild?
Yeah, I did.
It's that kind of movie where he meets various people along the way. And there's a big tragedy that is almost in the center of everything for him.
Mm. Yeah.
And his whole life is eventually rotates around that tragedy.
Yeah.
Okay. A series of tragedies, actually, not just one. And it's beautifully shot. The aspect ratio is, I love the aspect ratio. It's
what
a box.
Oh, the 4x3 vibe.
And not really, hey? It's like, it doesn't even complete.
I don't know what it is.
4x3, it's bottom to top, right? With the sides cut off. Not cut off, but blocked off, right? This, it's like, dead center. It's like a square in the middle of the screen.
It's letterbox, but I don't know what the ratio is.
But it's such a beautiful
sounds
form.
Sounds like it would be a 4x4 or 1x1,
something
whatever.
Like that,
But it's a great performance. It's restrained. Mm. It's not overly emotional for emotional sake. It's not like here's my Oscar reel moment. It's just Joel Edgerton is such a great subtle actor.
Mm. Yeah. When you got the right person,
so good. Yeah.
You know, something I want to just sort of foreshadow is I want to talk about The Beast Within Me, the Netflix show with Claire Danes.
Mm.
Just how she was just so perfectly cast as such an expressive character.
Yeah.
Cool.
She's also underrated.
Mm. Very underrated.
Mm.
Okay, so yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I think it's
not much to talk about because it is a vibe movie,
but
really
hard to describe.
I think there is something lovely about what we're talking about here, which is that there's this overarching vibe of the movie. And I think to really appreciate and love these movies, you have to be in that vibe.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like you have to be of that frequency to enjoy that.
It's not a casual
frequency watch.
It's not a Netflix watch where you can just be like, oh, let's put this on in the background. Like you said, Netflix, even though it's filled to the brim with a lot of shit, a lot of casual nonsense like Red Notice and all this stuff, what Netflix has these beautiful Netflix, not Netflix originals, but Netflix distributed movies where they are just works of art. Roma by Alfonso Cuarón, like that's Train Dreams, Flipping. There's a bunch of these great little pieces of art that are there. And then you get Frankenstein, which is artier, more accessible stuff. You know what I mean?
And it is them wanting to compete.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's the branch of Netflix that wants the awards to be in the reception of the office to show people that they've got some artistic credibility.
Mm. Yeah.
So these films get a brief cinema window so that they can qualify for the Oscars.
Yeah.
But ultimately they get seen on this platform.
Yeah. In some ways, Netflix is one of the only studios who makes films like this because they can afford to.
Yeah,
Netflix like to sell themselves as like the underdog compared to all the big studios, but they're the biggest studio.
Yeah.
They're bigger than any other
production studio in
the world.
And everybody knows that the economics of television would completely change if they just woke up one day and said, we're doing sport.
Yes.
Yeah, no,
like if they chose to do that, they would just fucking cripple economies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that I like with Netflix as well, is that even though Train Dreams isn't a Netflix-funded film, they weren't the production studio behind it. They have the money to buy these. Like they, I think, who did the George Clooney one coming up with Adam Sandler?
Oh yes, I know what you're talking about.
The filmmaker behind that, it's Greta Gerwig's husband.
Yeah, Noah Baumbach.
Noah Baumbach. Like, with those, I think that might be a Netflix original. But yeah, like, they
it is
had
a Netflix
money,
film, and you were talking about Jay Kelly.
That's it.
So the thing is, like with Netflix as well, is like even though they're purchasing these films to stream, like Train Dreams,
yeah,
it's almost like, because we talk about prestige pictures, right? So have we spoken about that? On
yeah,
the
we've
show?
Touched on
yeah.
it.
Yeah, so like these are ones where they don't care if they don't have high streaming rates or whatever.
Yeah.
They just want to give these great artists a platform.
Yeah. No,
and that's where I appreciate that
it's
stuff.
It's the fertilizer. It's the yeah. fertilizer in the soil. But you can almost imagine one or two members of the Netflix board, you know, pushing and advocating for this, yeah. going like, yeah. guys, we really got to put this on.
Yeah. Or there's
this,
guys. There's,
this is just going to give us some credibility.
Or there's the help. Executives who are like, is it sexy though? Does yes. Joel Edgerton, can we get him to take his shirt off? You know? Like, yeah, but Graham and E, what else did you think about it?
I was going to say, it's the most, I mean this in a complimentary way, it's the most watching a movie has ever felt like reading a book.
Oh, 100%. It felt like I was reading a book. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's based on a novella,
the,
yeah.
Yeah, there's something about it that just feels like the way, because it's so like compartmentalized and it's not
100%,
a consistent story, it's got this like train of thought thing to it.
Yeah.
Which feels very
the narration
prosaic.
Helps. Yeah, the yeah. narration helps. Because I often, narration for me often is, way too often is a get out of jail free card.
Yeah.
They're telling you things that they can't really express on screen. But this, it works. It feels like you said, it feels like I'm flipping through pages.
Yeah.
Like even the scene where they're plotting the rocks out on the grass,
yes.
and they're like pretending this is their house.
Yeah.
The moment that came up, I'm like, I can picture reading
yeah.
this description.
Was it based on a book?
Did yeah.
A novella, yeah.
It was. Yeah. Interesting.
Apparently the book's great. It's also simple prose.
Yeah.
It's supposed to represent, because his character dropped out of school when
yes.
he was young.
Yeah.
So he's a man of the world, essentially. And the book is written almost like through the language that he would understand. And he's not a stupid man in
yeah.
it by any means, but he's more of a man that is very tactile. He understands what's
yeah.
in front of him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's a great scene. I'm not giving anything away because it follows, they tell you at the beginning, it's 80 years of his life.
Yeah.
yeah.
Right? So he witnesses the moon landing, and he's watching a TV in the town, like a window in the window. And he's like, what's that? And the lady's like, she's like, what is he up to?
Yeah.
And this woman's like, he's on the moon. And he was like, okay, that's cool.
Yes.
Like, he doesn't quite understand, holy shit, we're on the moon.
The first thing yeah. he does is look up.
Yeah.
He
yeah,
like,
yeah,
looks
yeah.
up and he's like,
that's crazy.
Like, that guy's up there.
Yeah, because there's a sequence as well where he helps build a wooden bridge
yes.
for a train. And then he briefly speaks about, the narrator says that, like, this bridge will become obsolete in, like, 15 years because a concrete one will be built.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so interesting how, like,
You mentioned William H. Macy is in it. He's got
yeah.
a small role, but he's so good in
yeah,
this.
Yeah, he's so good.
He's incredible in this.
Yeah. Everyone's
I think,
so good.
Yeah. Today is going to be a little bit of a Netflix.
Oh, really?
A bit of a Netflix episode because one thing I appreciated, I'm not the biggest fan of his music, is Ed Sheeran has dropped this interesting product.
Okay.
It's effectively a film.
Yeah.
It's somewhat of a concert film, but in the wake of adolescence
yes.
and this little chubby that all DOPs and production guys get at the thought of doing a one-shot.
Oh, yeah.
We have this interesting concert film, which could only be done in today's age with a guy like Ed Sheeran, who famously came from a culture of busking
yeah.
and
looping.
Playing and looping and,
yeah.
and being that kind of performer, as opposed to a Taylor Swift, which is this kind of big epic pop star.
Mm.
So it works in the format of Ed Sheeran's music, which is just him and a guitar. But the idea is that, and I believe, I was looking for it, I believe it is one shot.
Okay.
A lot of these films like Birdman, 1917, very famously give you the idea of one shot, but
yeah.
we know when those cuts probably could have taken place. Famously, Adolescence was one continuous shot that they had to rehearse, which is incredible. But yeah, this starts with him at a sound check. He walks off the stage and goes through New York City from the High Line, which is this lovely pedestrian path where obviously these moments have been kind of orchestrated and, okay. and are waiting for him to kind of arrive. And he moves through New York performing songs on buses and okay. taxis and people and shows. And it's a fun idea.
Cool.
It's a cool idea.
It's a yeah. cool idea. It's something for the production people to admire.
Yes.
Mm. It's something for fans of him to appreciate. Mm. It's an exciting new thing. product cool. to exist.
It's just a shame that... It's a shame that it's Ed Sheeran.
No, he's fine. I like what he represents in the world of music.
Yeah, he's a talented dude. Yeah.
He's a certainly talented yeah. dude who has made it very clear that he's gotten where he's gotten because of his hard work.
Yeah,
doesn't seem like a bad dude.
Yeah, he seems yeah. like a lovely yeah. dude. There's that incredible interview with Jim Carrey and Margot Robbie on the couch of Graham Norton, where Jim Carrey says, "I'm so happy to you, Margot Robbie, like yeah. it's just so incredible that you know that you've achieved what you've achieved despite your, you know, your obvious
obvious,
what is his choice of words, like the fact that you obviously have all this forget his words, but it's like he's basically saying like
you're ugly
despite being so ugly,
yeah,
you know, at the face of all of that you've achieved so much. And Margot Robbie just takes it on the chin. Yeah. She's like, of course I know.
Yeah.
Of course I know my career has been impacted because I'm gorgeous.
Yeah.
But yeah, over on we're going to skip over to Apple TV very quickly to say that The Lost Bus is something we spoke about. Great. Based on a true story, Matthew McConaughey. We are in the depths of that small California town fire, California yeah. as we are faced with this moment where a public school bus driver is helping in the wake of what was considered one of the more devastating fires.
Okay.
It's just lovely when it's a true story. It's lovely knowing that humanity prevailed and that these people, despite what's going on in their lives, sacrificed themselves for others.
Okay.
It's just a good reminder of humanity.
Okay. Yeah, I started it a while ago. I can't remember why I stopped watching, but I was enjoying it.
Cool. No, it's a good film to see. The Lost Bus. But yeah, over on Netflix in the world of television, we've got The Beast Within Me, which is something I wanted to chat to you guys about. This is a Netflix limited series starring Claire Danes. Mm. Who, if you don't know who Claire Danes is, she was Juliet in the famous Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, Homeland. As well.
Homeland, which was a big one. But very largely, I don't think has, certainly not had the career of Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
But very credible actor. And I think we were shown, actually, in Romeo and Juliet, just how good of an actress she is, because they famously did not get along. But when you watch Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, you are with them 100% of the way as they pine and literally die for each other.
Right.
So despite not enjoying time on set with Leonardo DiCaprio, she was able to very convincingly show you how much she loved her. Loved
That's good
him.
Acting.
So that is fucking great acting. But yeah, we have Claire Danes play someone called Agatha Wiggs, who is living in a more countryside part of America, like a sort of the depths of the suburbs in a sort of New Jersey, Rhode Island kind of small town.
Okay.
And next door to her, or just down the road, it's a wealthy neighborhood. Comes a very famous person in the world.
Right.
And this is a controversial public figure who's a property developer. His name is Nile Jarvis. I also find it interesting that this is a show that has you remember characters' names, where sometimes sometimes a show or a movie leaves you cold where you actually don't remember the characters, but it just shows you how fully realized these people are. And Nile Jarvis is known, at least in America, as being this famous downtown New York property developer.
Okay.
I guess the way in which Trump, at a certain point in his career, was known as a property developer, as much of a celebrity as a property developer could be. But his wife famously went missing.
Okay.
And it was ruled as a suicide, but everybody believes, the court of public opinion believes he did it. And they get to know each other as neighbors. She is an author, a nonfiction writer who achieved quite a lot of fame with a very personal book about the relationship with her father.
Right. Okay.
And so quite a lot of people know her for that. And she wants to, she should be writing a book about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but can't get the inspiration and meets this crazy guy who kind of basically turns her life upside down.
Okay.
Complications, violence, gaslighting ensues. She also wants to now write a book about him, try to get him to tell his story.
Okay.
But then shit goes all over the place.
Right.
And it's cool. And I just love how we're in this era, especially with these psychological thrillers, it's literally there in the name, that it is an incredible exercise in gaslighting,
right,
where your main character believes someone to be a certain thing, and then by episode two, you're now thinking maybe he was innocent.
Okay. But
then by episode three, you're thinking, no, he totally did kill his wife.
Right.
And other people die in this story. And as our characters are gaslit, a good example was a few episodes ago, we spoke about the woman in Cabin 10.
Oh, yeah.
It's a perfect limited series vehicle, because you can dedicate a whole episode to convincing both the characters and the audience a particular way.
Yeah.
And then you can rule it by episode two to go, here's the other side of it.
Right.
And you go, oh my God, he didn't do it. And so it's like, it's such an interesting exercise, and you have to be smart.
Yeah.
You have to know how to gaslight someone. And it just becomes this incredible exercise in point of view and gaslighting, and
right,
how you manipulate the audience so that in episode three or four, when something's revealed, you're like, did she do that? Could she have done that?
Okay.
What the fuck is going on? Just as she is going, what the fuck is going on? I just love that. I love how you are manipulated in, and it's literally in the name, psychological thriller. This is all in your head. Or is it?
Right.
Yeah.
So I recommend it. The Beast Within.
Cool.
It certainly goes to some dark places. It's certainly violent at times. So it's not a mooch.
Mm.
But it plays also straight into the hands of that typical, dare I say it, but it leans to the feminine. The idea that that women love murder podcasts, true crime podcasts, whatever that sort of stereotype joke sentimentality is, this plays firmly into that.
Okay.
Which is like, did he do it? Did he not do it?
Right.
Also, look at Claire Danes' eyes. Look at her lips. Look at how she sort of quivers in these moments. There's this great scene where she's crying, and it's like she's the ugliest crier.
Oh, yes.
And it, you know, that couldn't be further from the films like Champagne Problems, where everything is just so pretty.
Yeah.
The snow is gorgeous. It's not cold and damp and sludgy.
Yeah.
It's perfect, you know. And so when people cry, a good actress would know you're not going to be attractive when you do it.
Yes.
The guy who plays Niall Jarvis, I don't know his name, but is also so well cast that you can feel and see an evil in his face.
Right.
There's a sort of weaselly look to him. And this is why casting is going to get an Oscar.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be a category that gets an Oscar, because it actually is an art as to sort of, does this person, you know, sometimes, you know, a face can just be such a sweet face. That face could never be evil.
Yes.
With some people, you can just see it in their eyes. They can just be evil.
So that actually brings me to the question, like, because I was wondering, the first casting Oscars next year.
Yeah.
Right. Stunts will be the year after that.
Yes.
So that's why they're giving Tom Cruise his honorary Oscar now.
Yeah.
But like, basically for Mission Impossible. With casting, how are they going to determine who is the best casted movie? Because also let's talk about the front runners, right? So one battle after another is definitely going to get a nomination purely based on Chase Infinity, purely. Yeah. I would throw fucking the long walk in there.
I was going to say that is one of the ones that's on the list.
It won't, though, because it probably won't get any Oscar nominations. Yeah. But that cast is probably my favorite ensemble of the year. Fucking but, incredible cast.
Which I think I understand where you're headed. Like, which is, you know? Which is, how did those people get cast?
Yeah.
And you, of course, have a casting
director.
Yeah,
people don't realize what they do. And it's crazy.
What they do more than anything
sorry,
else.
You said doo-doo. Sorry.
Jesus. Man. What they spend most of their time doing is weeding out the people that aren't and the hard work that goes into finding.
Mm.
Yeah. But once you have found, were you the one that said it's got to be him? Because what happens if the director advocated or pushed and actually pushed back against the casting director and ultimately won because he was the director, or the studio who pushed for whatever reason.
It's
quite a meddled art. It's not as obvious as we saw Graham sewing that ball gown. Like he designed it. We saw the sketches. He deserves the costume Oscar.
But that's the thing though, like, because casting directors, it's also about chemistry reads. It's about, like you said, it's about finding that right person. Because at the end of the day, sometimes the director doesn't know what they want, and the casting director helps them. Or the director thinks they know what they want, and they're like, no, it's actually this. Like, I mean, there's that famous scene in Mulholland Drive where Justin Theroux plays a director who's trying to get this biopic made of, like, this 50s singer or actress or whatever. Anyways, throughout the movie, there's moments where there's mysterious figures who are telling him, this is the girl. Even though he wants to cast someone else entirely, they're like, this is the girl. And if you don't do it, something is going to happen to you. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's interesting how like that plays a factor where like studios will be like, no, we want it to be Sydney Sweeney. No, but I want this person. No, it has to be. And I've had experiences of that where, you know, we've done a pilot where the executives were pushing for someone because they had the right amount of pretty that they liked.
Right.
But we were pushing for someone else because they had the character down. You know what I mean? They weren't conventionally pretty, but they were that person.
Yeah.
It's like Steve Buscemi. He's a weird, like, as Francis McDormand says in
guy
Fargo.
With the funny eyes.
Yeah, he's a funny looking guy, you know? Yeah. Is that like he is just right for those roles because he brings a certain oomph to those characters. You know?
Yeah, you hear these great stories, one of which was Heath Ledger in 10 Things I Hate About You, and how he was famously the sort of last person to be seen on the day.
Right.
Just when he walked in, they could just, you hear these people talk about how they could just tell.
Or Harrison Ford was working in the prop department or something on Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
You know, and they brought him in to do line reads with other actors.
Yeah,
to like, just like play opposite them just for their auditions, and they wind up casting him as Han Solo because of that.
Yeah, because he's hot and funny.
Yeah,
so yeah,
he's rugged. He's rugged from all his carpentry.
Right.
But I'm interested to see where that goes because I mean, like you look at The Long Walk. That cast is a proper ensemble piece.
Mm.
You know, it's each one of those characters is perfectly cast. Cool. Like you couldn't have changed each of those. Like I couldn't. It's like Boogie Nights. Famously, DiCaprio was supposed to play Dirk Diggler, right? But he pulled out because of Titanic, because he was like, and DiCaprio famously regrets not doing Boogie Nights, but I can't picture him in the role of Dirk Diggler. Mark Wahlberg owns that role.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And he's got the exact vibe of being smart and determined, but a little stupid.
Yeah. Like, and that's the thing, though, is that
how's your mother?
But that's the thing though. Like PTA wanted DiCaprio, and it just worked out that this is obviously the role that it, you know. Anyways,
you're hearing this now that Andrew Garfield was meant to be Frankenstein.
Yeah,
monster.
He
was meant to be the
now.
Creature.
Yeah,
yeah.
That makes no sense because Elordi is huge.
Yeah, he's a fridge.
He's a fridge of a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and he was perfect. What a performance. Holy shit.
Mm.
Yeah. Old Elordi is on a run.
I'm
rather excited to be screening Wuthering Heights.
Oh, right.
Very cool.
Come February next year. It's
I hope Emerald Fennell pulls it off because, yes, yep. I hated Saltburn. Oh, I fucking hated Saltburn. But I'm excited for that. Great cool. cast. Yeah.
It's such a great, she's got such a great name. Emerald.
Yeah.
Emerald Fennel. All right. One last little mention. Sorry. Cool. Just because it is a sort of a show of the moment. Is we've got season two of A Man on the Inside,
okay.
which is Ted Danson.
Oh, did they having, do a second season?
Yeah, cool. It's very cool. Okay. So this
I've started
is,
and enjoyed it.
This yeah. is Ted Danson being the Silver Fox Ted Danson, you know, his later chapter.
Yes.
Where he finds himself in retirement with kind of nothing to do, a wife that's recently passed away. And he stumbles into the world of private detectiveness.
Okay.
And the first season, and what was probably meant to just be the one and done,
yes.
was him going into a retirement home because he was older. He could legitimately be the person on the inside. Okay. And I thought it is worth a mention that the Bioscope recently hosted a Spanish language South American film festival.
Yes.
Called the Diversitas Film Festival, the and Mole it was agent. Based yeah. on the Mole Agent.
Which was not
thank you for ruining my reveal.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
You film nerd. But it is called the film. It is called sorry. The Mole Agent. No, okay. I love it. Parent, don't ever stop fuck, being I'm that sorry. Person. Don't ever Jesus stop God. Revealing.
I know people listening are like, shut the fuck up. God damn.
No, man. It's lovely. I love it. I love it. I think it's great. I think it is astounding. That it took me after 15 years of owning a cinema to know this when the Chilean embassy was like, this is the film.
Okay.
And it was an Oscar and only once it was an Oscar nominated documentary. And only once I was kind of putting it up did I go, oh.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Cause this is what The Man on the Inside was based on.
Yeah, because when I started watching Man on the Inside, I was like, this is definitely based on the documentary, like 100%. Because the documentary, it's a true story.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Actually, yeah.
About a guy who goes into a retirement home
okay.
as a secret agent.
Yeah.
Mm. It's cool. Well, I love it. And now in season two, it is not filled with bloody murder and death. It okay. is... It's a niggly little problem. It was like in season one, it was about a stolen piece of jewelry.
Right.
And I just think in the wake, as an antithesis to The Beast Within, which is fucking dead people getting their face smashed in, literally, this is charming to have the opposite.
Mm.
Okay.
And so this is a little more lighter and fun.
Cool.
And it's cool to have a season two, which has also got Schmitty in it.
Oh.
Shame. It's so hard. He can't do anything else. The dude who was Schmitty in New Girl. No matter what he does, he will always unfortunately just be that guy.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Because it is such a cool thing to have been. But Ted Danson, Man on the Inside.
Cool.
Over on Netflix.
Right.
All right. Anything else that we're burning to chat about?
I have one more addition to our list that we made a few weeks ago of South Africans not played by South Africans.
But a worthy SAFA appearance.
I think it's all right.
Okay.
I watched Sunshine this week, and I've never realized this before. But Mark Strong's character.
Oh, is he supposed to be
South African? Yes. I realized it for the first time.
Is he convincing? Because I haven't seen Sunshine in years.
It's all right.
Okay, it's bad because then I would have remembered.
Yes.
What is Sunshine?
The Alex Garland, Danny Boyle movie about them restarting the sun.
Yeah. It turns into a slasher in the last 20 minutes.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's incredible.
Okay.
Let's watch it again.
That's the SAFA list.
Really good.
Oh, what you're inspiring me.
Yes.
Is what we got to chat about. I don't want to put this out there now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We are approaching our 200th episode.
Yes.
Yes.
And what we also do around this time of year
yeah.
is what we at the video store call the most rented episode, which is our best of the year. And we do it in a special format where as many of us who work behind the counter come together and we go around the circle and we name our favorite film and TV from the year. Cool. So I want to do that as our 200th episode.
Okay.
I think the stars align perfectly as to when that 200th comes out.
Cool.
I want to spend the 200th episode with you guys.
Cool.
The people I love and in this kind of lovely format where we go through the year. What I want to add in amongst that
is
I want to reach out to some of our past guests and our friends to be sending us returns of their favorite film or TV. So we'll put those in amongst us. Okay. So I think it'll make for a very special episode. But added to that, I want our growing list of awards.
All right.
Okay. So like the best Saffa.
All right.
And okay.
And that could most likely go to Veronica van der Berg.
All right.
Because of her recent character in Now You See Me, Now You Don't.
Yeah.
I would love, we joked about it last year, the best Hang Dong moment.
Oh, okay.
I want the video store's most rented episode to include the kind of anti-awards.
Okay, cool.
Because we are, at that point, always in the start of the award season.
Yeah.
Where we are going to talk to death about actor, director, writing, editing.
Mm.
Let's talk about some of the extra moments. So, most gooey.
Oh, right.
Okay.
And I don't think it should even be the movie. It should just be a moment. It should be a moment.
Right.
So, yeah, for those who don't know, the Hang Dong moment is the best...
long scene.
The best reveal of male genitalia.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to know, Perrin, you could probably lead the nominations.
I'll
be
real call in.
Because this is something you guys talk about.
I've often recommend Hang Dong moments to
Graham, perhaps something you can think about is the biggest swing.
Okay.
That's a Hang Dong moment as well.
It's a different swing.
Well, if it's 28 years later, it's the biggest swing.
Yeah, it's so true. Actually, there we go. Winner already. Yep. Boom, done.
Okay. I want everyone browsing the shelves overhearing us chat to also think about what could be some funny awards that we can give out.
Cool.
And if you've got any, please, if you've been listening thus far,
yes.
Put them in the comments below so cool. We can start building on this list. I love building up. I love the fact that when we once hosted our Video Store Presents nights, we thought, wouldn't it be fun if we gave away some Gad Rock? You know, Gad makes candy and he's a member of our video store. Let's ask some questions. Okay, well, how do we know who to give it to? And then it was decided... You've got to stand up and say, "Oh, Captain, my Captain," which is such a lovely film reference to the Dead Poets Society.
Mm. Yeah.
So I love these things can build up. Okay. And I love the fact that we can build these traditions. I think that's what's been the most fun for me with the video store is to build our terminology, build our shelves, build our in-jokes. And that means a lot to me. So that's why I want to celebrate our 200th episode with you guys doing this.
Cool.
All right.
Nice.
Thank you, guys.
Lovely. Yay.
Okay. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, good job.